Tonight we're going to do part two of Bishul Akum. Just to review, there's an issur d'rabbanan to eat foods cooked by a non-Jew. What's the reason? The primary reason we saw last week was because of chasnas, because of the concern that it will lead to intermarriage. Everybody knows that social interactions over food, sometimes we hope a little more, will lead to something else. And therefore, for that reason, it is prohibited to eat foods cooked by a non-Jew. Now, we saw a number of limitations on that. The first one that we saw was Eino Nachal al Shulchan Malachim. If the food is not fit to be eaten on a king's table, what does that mean? It means that, according to most poskim, you would serve this type of food at a royal banquet, at a state dinner, and the like. And therefore, simple types of things that would not be served at the White House for a state dinner are excluded in the prohibition of Bishul Akum, which includes, of course, many of the things that we regularly make. Moreover, we saw that we follow the particular type of food, not the min. So while potatoes might be used for fancy dishes, but potato chips are certainly not, and therefore, according to most poskim, potato chips are not subject to the restrictions of Bishul Akum. We also mentioned, I believe, that if food is edible raw, so it's not subject to the restrictions of Bishul Akum. We said that is if it's eaten. This doesn't mean it's like nachal idat chak. Doesn't mean that it's gross to eat raw. But if most people would eat this food raw, then even if it happens to be cooked by a non-Jew, and even if it happens to be nechal al shulchan malachim, but since most people would eat this food uncooked, so then it's okay. So now we're going to begin back. It's hard to stay away from this. Dinei taroves. What about when the foods get mixed in? So what's the halacha if you have two foods mixed together, and one is nechal chai, and one is not? So let's give an example. Let's say a non-Jew cooks tomato soup with rice. So is rice nechal chai? No. Is tomato soup nechal chai? Yes. What's tomato soup comprised of? Tomatoes. You could eat those raw. And water, right?
I mean, that's a lot of people put onions in.
Okay, good. So let's even assume for a moment, we talked about onions last week, but let's even if you said onions are not nechal chai. So we have water, tomatoes, onions, rice. So two of the ingredients are nechal chai, the tomatoes and the water, and two of the ingredients are eino nechal chai. So what's the halacha? So as a taroves, as a taroves, as a combination, it's not nechal chai, because you put, let's imagine, you just put in your pot together the water, the tomatoes. Tomatoes don't have to, could be in the form of tomato juice or tomato paste or tomato sauce, but tomatoes, water, tomatoes, rice, and onion. So right now you wouldn't eat this raw, because there's rice here. But what happens? But so maybe you would think it's asur. So the Gemara says no. We look at what's the ikker. And as long as the ikar is nechal chai, then the whole thing is considered nechal kamoshu chai, and therefore not subject to the restriction of Bishul Akum. So let's take our example. What's the ikar ingredient of tomato soup? Tomatoes. All right, tomatoes and water, both of which are nechal chai. The rice, the onions are definitely not the ikar. And therefore, tomato soup cooked by non-Jew, L'chora should be mutter. That's what the Gemara says. Oh, yeah.
We're saying like the meaning. They turned on like from start to finish.
They did everything, 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 everything. Still, since the ikar of this is eino nachal, is nachal kamo shuchai, it's mutter. Good. Now let's say the following thing happens. Let's say something that's usher because of Bishul Akum gets mixed in with something that's not usher because of bishalakka. Okay, we'll give some practical examples. You'd be surprised that this comes up. But what's the halacha? It's mostly things that are mutter. Let's see, what's an example? Let's take the following example. Let's say tonight we had chicken soup with noodles. Okay, leftovers, of course. Let's say for a moment that the noodles were cooked by a non-Jew, and therefore they become aser. Right? We talked about last week that most noodles are probably subject to the restrictions of bishalakum. We thought maybe elbow macaronis would be okay. You'd never serve elbow macaronis at a steak dinner, but most other types of noodles could be served at a fancy meal. So now, the noodles were cooked in one pot. The chicken soup was cooked in another pot. So the noodles were cooked by a non-Jew, they're aser. Chicken soup was mutter. And then they're mixed together. And then you say, oyvei. So you strain out the noodles and you throw them out. Can I eat the chicken soup? The chicken soup is now full of tam noodles, right? Because they were cooked together. If the noodles were unkosher, then would I be able to eat the chicken soup even after I've strained out the noodles? It was lots and lots of noodles cooked together with the chicken soup, heated up in a pot with the chicken soup, and now I strain out the noodles. Can I eat the chicken soup? If the chicken noodles were not kosher. No, why not? Our favorite rule of tam ke'ikar. Right? Good. In other words, the concern is that the noodles imparted taste to the chicken soup, and even after you've removed the be'en, they're still tam. But in our case, the noodles aren't actually treif. They're bishalakum. So does that change anything? What do you think?
Is bishalakum the same as treif?
Ah, good question. Exactly. In other words, do we see bishalakum like other forms of machalos asuros as a cheftza shel isher, or no? We don't. Why would you say not? One theory to say not is because blios are not going to lead to intermarriage. A good meal might lead to intermarriage, but nobody's going to marry somebody because of their blios. So that being the case, maybe things are different. So this is a machlokes rishonim. We'll return to it later when we talk about the question of whether you have to kasher a pot. This comes up all the time. Somebody's a non-Jewish maid cooks something, and now you have to know, do you have to kasher the pot? Right? But what about in our case? First, about in terms of the noodles. Seemingly, it should be the same question as the pot, but it might not be. So the shach says it's mutter. The shach says as long as rove heter, then it's going to be mutter. So assuming the chicken soup was the rove, obviously, if you'd have to remove the noodles because they're removable, but as long as it's rove heter, and you've removed whatever you can remove, then it's mutter. And Gra says no. The Gra says, Paskins, that we treat this as other types of machalos asuros, and therefore it would be usher to eat this chicken soup. Yeah, Shuli.
What if you can't take out the
you can't, okay, so you can't take it out, and it's unnoticeable, then you'd follow Rov according to the Shach. And according to the Gra, you would need shishim. Correct. You have two pots of chicken soup, one cooked by a non-Jew, which is aser, one cooked by a Jew, which is mutter. You mix them together, 60% kosher, 40% not kosher. According to the shach, it would be mutter. So how do we put... Right. If you can remove it, you should. So this is a machlokas, and it's not actually... so clear how we paskin. Probably we would be machmir like the Gra, but we would certainly consider the Shach's view a tzad lahakel if there are other factors. And as we'll see, oftentimes in questions of bishul akum, there are going to be other factors for leniency, which we'll get to shortly. Okay, the next question, which is an application of this rule. Really, the first rule, actually, that's more similar, perhaps, to the tomato soup, Shaila, is the following. Okay. Are you allowed to go ahead and buy coffee from Starbucks? Now, we talked about that before in terms of the kashrus question, right? So we discussed maybe yes, maybe no. Let's say you follow the lenient view that we discussed and you think that there's no kashrus issue. But there's a big question, which is that your, what do they call them, baristas? Your barista is not Jewish, probably. And therefore, why isn't the coffee aser? Because it's bishalakam. It's cooked, right? Is it nechal al shulchan malachim? Yes. Is coffee nechal chai? No, right? Try eating coffee beans. Can't eat them raw. So seemingly it should be aser. Anybody have any studim lahakal? Yeah. That's it. There you go. You get it. In other words, rove water. What's the primary ingredient of coffee? It's water. So the truth is, the Rishonim don't address the question concerning coffee. Among other things, they didn't have coffee. Imagine how they became such big Talmidei Chachamim without coffee. I don't know how they stayed awake during Seder. So the Rishonim talk about the question concerning beer. And the Rishonim Tosu says there's two possible reasons why beer might be mutter. One is because it's Eino Nachal Shulchan Malachim. Two, because it's rov water. So if you think that the answer one is correct, then we're stuck for coffee. It's Nachal Shulchan Malachim. But if you think answer number two is correct, then you'd be okay for coffee. So how do we paskin? So most poskim are mako, and since the water is the primary ingredient, even though you'll say it's not an important ingredient, relatively speaking, you're spending $4 for your coffee at Starbucks. Hopefully it's not really the water. I don't know why it's the coffee either, but anyway. So we paskin that since the water is the primary ingredient, then it's mutter, there's no problem for Bishalakam. Yeah. No, even if it's not 60 to 1. That's, you only need 60 to 1 when you have something that's aser because of bishalakum mixed with something that's mutter. So there, since we say, if you paskin like the gra, since it's aser, so you need shishim to 1. Here, there's no iser that's created. From the very beginning, it's rov davar shenechal kamo shuchai, and it's mutter. It's like the tomato soup, Shaila. Right? Yeah. Ah, very good. So the answer is, we'll return to that question, but here it's inedible at that state, so it's not fully cooked. In other words, even if the coffee beans are roasted, you can't eat them in that state. So they're not yet edible. Now, if you had a situation where something was fully edible and then mixed, so then you're right. According to the gra, you wouldn't eat shishim. But since coffee, ground coffee, is inedible, so then it's going to be okay. Okay. So the next question is one that comes up all the time. Most of the practical bishalakum questions are situations where people have employees working in their houses or restaurants or the like, but we'll give houses, that's more in common. They have a babysitter or a maid or the like, and the babysitter cooks something. So A is the food mutter. B, do you have to kasher the kalim? So, Tosfos cites a view of Rabbi Avram ben Rabbi David, who says that we shouldn't aser the bishul akum that shvachos cook in the house of a Jew. Why? Because the reasons aren't applicable. Presumably saying that, look, you're not going to marry this shifcha, and therefore it's okay. Now, almost all the Rishonim argue with his view. Why do they argue? So we find three arguments that oppose it. Tosfos HaRash and the Mordechai say it's a low plug. It's true that maybe in this particular case there's no concern of intermarriage, but as we saw last week, we don't look at this particular case. We don't say, oh, well, I'm not going to marry this particular woman who cooked it or man that cooked it, so it's okay. No, since generally there's a concern of intermarriage, of chasnas, so therefore anything cooked by a non-Jew. Remember last week we had the example of the monk bread, right? So even though there's no concern of intermarriage with monks, because they're take an oath of celibacy, still doesn't matter, because it's a low plug. So therefore, seemingly, the Rabbeinu Avram is incorrect, lahalacha. That's the first reason to oppose it. Rabbeinu Tam and Tosfos actually gives a different reason. He says, well, even if you think that there's no concern for chasnus, still there's a concern that there is Shema Irev Bo Davar Tame. If you remember from last week, we noted that some Rishonim are concerned for Bishul Akum because of the mixing of non-kosher ingredients, and that might apply for a Shifcha. You could say it won't apply. All the ingredients in my house are kosher. Yeah, but maybe they mixed in some milk or something else. And finally, the third reason is given by the Ritzvah. He says, here too, there's a concern for Chasnas. How do you know? Some people might actually get involved with things even with their shifcha. So that is the opinion of Rabbeinu Avram. So how do we paskin? So the Shulchan Aruch starts off by saying as follows: Yesh mi shematir b'shifchos shelanu. Now that is not actually referring to Rabbeinu Avram. That is probably referring to the Ramban. The Ramban is a different head. Ramban says that if you own a slave, then there's no Isser of Bishul Akum. Now, obviously, our employees are employees, they're not slaves. What is he referring to? So in the times of the Ramban, it was legal to own a slave, and there are halachos that apply to a slave owned by a Jew. For example, there's an Isser de Oraisa upon the Jew if their Eved works on Shabbos, right? It's a Pasuk. Your Eved may not work. That's talking about an owned slave, even at all, right? It's not the Isser de Rabbanan of Amir al-Nachri. It's an Isser de Oraisa. At least, it's not so clear why the Rishonim, why in the times of the Rishonim people weren't doing this, but strictly speaking, it would seem that if you own a slave, you would have to have milah, v'tfilah, their chayav and mitzvos, except for mitzvos asei shezman grama and various other halachos. But one way or the other, the Ramban seems to be talking about a slave, not an employee. If so, so that seemingly is not relevant for us. The Shulchan Aruch continues, v'yesh misha oser, v'afilu b'diaved. So the Shulchan Aruch brings two opinions, but l'chora, even the Mekilim don't help for us, because again, the Mekilim are not talking about employees. Haga, uvidyeved, yesh lismocha divrei matirin, says the Ramah, b'dyeved, you could be somech on the lenient view. So what does that mean? What does the Ramah mean? B'dyeved is very important, because like I said, lots of these questions are b'dyeved. My maid cooked something for me, or I was planning to stir it. We'll talk about later why stirring helps, or I was planning on turning up the flame or taking it off or fixing it in some way. I forgot. So if the Ramah says b'dyeved it's mutter for all employees, so that will be a very important kula. It will come up all the time. But it's not clear, because maybe the Ramah only means b'dyeved the lenient view cited by the Mechaber, namely with avadim is mutter, but it doesn't help for our employees. So there are actually four possibilities in the Shach to explain the Ramah. Possibility number one is it's dafka avadim hakenuyos that the Ramah is mekel b'diaved, and therefore b'diaved we're stuck. Again, a employee in our house that cooks something that's nachal al shulchan malachim and eno nachal k'mo shulchai would be aser b'diaved. Possibility two is he holds like Rabbi Avram, in which case the halacha would be that all employees it's mutter b'diaved. Possibility three is the Ramah's makel because of a different consideration he mentions later, that we assume that some Jew probably was mechata begechalim, stoked the coals. In the olden days, to keep the fire going, you needed to stoke the coals all the time, and therefore, presumably, somebody in the family who was Jewish stoked the coals. Now, if that's a consideration, obviously, that won't apply to us. And possibility number four is the Ramah is based off of a Rashba that says, since they listen to us, ve'eno mirtzono, they're not doing what we say because they want to, because they have to listen to us, so then leka kirav das, that doesn't lead to the type of intimacy that might lead to chasnas. It's not clear if that would apply to us. Maybe that would only apply to an eved, not necessarily an owned eved, but an eved, because our employees don't have to listen to us. On the other hand, you might say that they do have to listen to us, because if they don't listen to what we ask them to do, we'll fire them. In which case, they listen to what we say, not because they want to, because they want to keep their job. In which case, maybe it does. So it's not clear if this applies to us. So this is a big machlokas haposkim. What's the halacha bidyaved if an employee in our houses cooks? So this could be bidyaved because, you know, you generally ask them, you know, you only have them cook things that are einon ol al shulchan malachim, or you stoke it but you forgot. Or it could be bidyaved because you're going to somebody's house for Shabbos, and then after you're there you find out, oh my gosh, the maid cooked everything, because these are one of the halachos that really people don't know about, the halachos of bishalakum. There are certain types of halachos people know. There are plenty of people that keep kosher in all other respects except for some things like bishalakum. So, can you eat it now? Oh my gosh. So, what's the halacha? How do we paskin if b'di'evet it was cooked? So, Rabbi Willig thinks that you could be makel on the kalim bizman hazeh. That's because bidi'eved, we'll see later on, tzmach lokas rishonim, we'll see it later, but between the Rashba and the Rash, if bishal akum asers kalim. So the Ra'ah is of the opinion that, let's say it really is something that's asr because of bishal akum, so the food's asr, but not the kalim. And the Rashba says, no, what difference does it make? Like we said, it's a chefta shalisr, it's like macholos asuros, even the kalim are asr. So Rabbi Willig thinks that if a non-Jewish employee cooks in somebody's house, you shouldn't eat the food, but you don't have to bother koshering the kalim, because we have, as it were, tutzdadim lahakel, right? What are the tutzdadim lahakel? Maybe we paskin like Rabbeinu Avram, that employees don't make something usher because of bishalakum. In Timtzaloma, we paskin against Rabbeinu Avram. Maybe we paskin like the lenient opinion that you don't have to kasher the kalim. And certainly, if the kalim are already eino ben yomo. So that's Rabbi Willig's view. What about the food? So he thinks that you shouldn't eat the food. Maybe if it's shasat chagadol, there's what to talk about. But under normal circumstances, shelo b'shasat chagadol, most people that could afford maids can also afford to throw out the dish that was cooked, get another dish. So at least shelo b'shasat chagadol, we would say don't eat the food, let the maid eat the food, but you wouldn't have to kasher the kalim. Other poskim are machmir, even b'di'evet, they say no, you do have to kasher the kalim. That's probably the more mainstream view. Rabbi Willig's make. Now, this is what I alluded to before when I said that on a lot of bishul akum shailas, there are other tzadim lahakel. What's the tzad lahakel? This, Rabbeinu Avram, because since most of our bishul akum shailas are really with employees, usually we don't have our non-Jewish neighbors come and cook things in our house. It's usually a question of some type of employee. And therefore, this tzad, even though we don't accept Rabbeinu Avram entirely, he's oftentimes a sniff lahakel for other things. We'll see, for example, There's a kula of pilot lights. We'll get there in a minute why that might be true. The Taz says, I don't like relying on the pilot light kula l'chatchila, but I'm willing to be mitztaref Rabbeinu Avram with the pilot light kula to say that it could be okay. Yeah. If, yes, you're right. Fundamentally, Eino Ben Yomo shouldn't be relevant. Because l'chatchila, you're never allowed to use something that's Eino Ben Yomo. And if it was done already, it's mutter even if it's an Issur Deraisa, right? No, no, afterwards. They used it and I used it 26 hours later. So that's for sure it's mutter. So now the question is, maybe l'chatchila I could use it. Because even according to the opinions that I should kasher it, it will still never make it aser b'dievet. So it's an additional sniff lahako, but you would never say it on its own, correct?
So if there was a kli that was used in the special achim, you make sure not to use onions in it, if one of the...
No, you don't have to. I think, I mean, it depends who you paskin like. Again, if you paskin like Rav Willig, then you don't have to kasher it. Straight, you don't have to kasher it. No, no, he's not. Forget that. Leave it out. It's not necessary. If you paskin like Rabbi Willig, you don't have to kasher it. If you paskin like other poskim, so you do have to kasher it, because the simple understanding is that the Ramah is machmir against Rabbeinu Avram. And moreover, the simple understanding, the Shulchan Aruch is against the is like the Rash, but you have to kasher Caleb. Okay? Fine. Now, there is a very important kula here. We said that, generally speaking, we reject the view of Rabbeinu Avram. We don't allow for non-Jewish employees to cook for us. That would be a problem of Bishul Akum. And if they did, we would say the food is aser. However, if you have a situation of a chola, so then we're mako, at least if there's no other choice. And this is very common with older people. They can no longer cook. They have some type of home health aide who cooks for them, who isn't Jewish. So obviously, if you don't need to rely on this leniency, you shouldn't. If, for example, you could have a pilot light, that's better, or the like. But because an elderly person is considered a chola, even if it's a chola she'en bo sakana, someone that can't function on their own, the Shulchan Aruch seems to be mekel in Shin Chav Ches Yod Tes Nor Chaim for Chola She'en Bo Sakana, and therefore there is more room for leniency in a situation like that to allow for Bishul Akum. Now then you'll ask me, well, what if they cook so they could eat it? Could I eat it? So this is actually a discussion in the Shulchan Aruch. Probably it's a machlokas Harishonim. And it's actually a stira in the Mishnah Brura, how do we paskin? We'll get to it at the end. Not clear how you should paskin. One could make the case that in that situation, it's better you should not eat the food. The chola could eat the food, but I think you could be makel on the dishes in this shaila. If somebody asked me this question once, they inherited a set of dishes from their grandparents, and towards the end of their grandparents' life, they had a home health aide that was doing their cooking. So now they were concerned that all their dishes were full of blios, shel bishul akum. There, I think one could be mako because of the very sniffim that we said, especially according to Rabbi Willig, but even for other reasons as well, additional ref factors, especially because they're dishes anyway. It's a klisheni, right? And moreover, we have Rabbeinu Avram to rely on. And moreover, it's not iser for them, and that might even make it not mutter aser for you, according to the Ra and the like. Yeah.
So what if you ask someone, the other person who made, preparing food that
usually that's no problem, because it's already...
Presumably it is edible.
Yeah.
It's not fully cooked,
yeah, so that's okay. In other words, that is... reheating food doesn't create a problem. Right? It's only taking food from a state of inedible and making it edible that there's a problem with Bishul Akum. So if the home health aide is just warming up food that was already cooked, So that's certainly not a problem. No, we wouldn't say that. I don't think so. I mean, you know, if you had a situation where the, you know, you had a yasom or something like that, there's no, you know, you had to. But I don't think for a regular, healthy child to rely on that kula, I think that's very, that would be inappropriate. For a child, it's easier. What you do is you, if they need a cook, make sure to cook things that are not nachal shochan malachim. If you use a microwave, we'll see shortly, there's, I believe, grounds for leniency, so have them cook things in a microwave or things that are in olah shochan malachim or the like. But I don't think you should rely on that. I hear what you're saying, but I don't think so. Okay. So there's a very interesting kula. I'll tell you a story. Somebody was, during a Friday night here, somebody comes up to me during a Din Nefesh, and they say, oh no, I think I forgot to turn on my crock pot. So they made everything, and they plugged it in, but they thought, I didn't turn it on. Turns out that they actually had turned it on, but they didn't know they did. Now, if, by the time they got home to check it, it would have been Bein HaShmashos. It would have been Pashkia, past sunset. Obviously, a Jew can't do malacha after sunset. So, can they ask a non-Jew? So in this case, ask a non-Jew to do malacha for you, Bein HaShmashos, especially when it's Tzar Suda, this was the main course of their Shabbos lunch, it would be okay to ask a non-Jew to turn on the crock pot. What's the problem? Bishalakam. It's also a problem, can you turn on a crock pot if you didn't pre-cook the chalet? So the first thing I asked them was, do you have a blech? Do you have a blech on your crock pot? So they said, yes, they have a blech. So does a blech work if the food is raw? No, does a blech only work if the food's already cooked beforehand, to kemachal ben drusai? This is a machlokas rishonim, the Rashba's machmir. Simple understanding is that the Shulchan Aruch is mekel. Maybe you could be mekel achatchila, but even according to the Machmirim, Kiveger cites the Rashba, certainly here where it's a Shas Adchak, you could be rely on a lenient opinion. So there's not going to be a problem of Shehia because they had a blech. Okay. Good. No, the crock pot already was on a blech. Blech in this case was aluminum foil that totally covered the entire heating area. Okay, and covered the knobs. Blech l'choladeus. Okay, good. So they had a blech, so therefore there's no problem of shehia, but the problem is bishalakum. So let's assume for the moment that chalent is nachal shulchan malachim, which I think probably it is. It's a meat stew, you would. So the question now is there anything that they could do? So there are two kulas that I could think of. One I'm going to tell you now, it's the fancy kula, and the other one I'll tell you in a couple minutes when we see a couple more halachos. So kula number one, the Gemara says a very interesting thing. If a non-Jew cooks something without intent to cook, so then the food doesn't become asar. For example, let's say the non-Jew decides to burn a Jew's field down. Okay, that's pretty annoying. But in the process, he happens to cook a bunch of locusts because they get fried while the field is burning down. So can you at least eat the locusts? So the Gemara says, yeah, sure. He didn't intend to cook. He intended to burn down your field. Great. Okay, so that's one of those kulas that you think isn't going to be relevant ever. But it's relevant over here. Because you could say the following chat. This is based off of an idea I once heard in the name of Shlomo Miller. Said, I told this guy like this. This is what you need to do. Have the guy come to your house and turn off the circuit breaker in the kitchen, for the kitchen. He doesn't see the kitchen. The kitchen's at the other end. Circuit breaker's right by the door. Turn off the circuit breaker. Now everything goes off in the kitchen, including the lights. Tell him, wait here. You run into your kitchen and you use your elbow and you flip the crock pot on. Now, you tell to the non-Jew, it's so dark in my kitchen, I can't see anything. And he says, oh, let me turn the lights back on. He flips the switch back on. Now, he's caused my chalent to cook. But did he intend to cook? He didn't know anything. He didn't know I had a chalent in the kitchen. He just meant to turn on my lights. Ah, there we go. It's mutter. He wasn't mechavin levashel. Okay. Next. Yeah. So then there's another kula, but again, you don't have enough information to appreciate the next kula. Yeah, you have a...
On the story, is it
if the food's already cooked, it's fine, but yeah. This chalent was raw, totally raw. According to the Pesach of the Shulchan Aruch, it's okay. No. There's another heter of Kedera Chaisa, which says that if there's something totally raw in it that's going to take a long time to cook, you also don't need a blech. You don't need it to be garfakatim. Applying that kula bizmana is questionable. But if you have a blech, according to the Pesach of the Shulchan Aruch, it's okay one way or the other. Okay? Great. Next.
Cake?
So this it depends. Well, I don't know how you cook, but yes. If you had a blech and you could cook, you could put raw cake on the blech before Shabbos. In a pan. She means sir pella. Don't you guys know of the sir pella? You see? See, you, who are is a Talmidav of Sirotskin, knows that, you know, that's how they used to cook in those days. Okay, so how do we paskin? It's a good question. Now is not a Hilchos Shabbos here. Who remembers what Rabbi Orlean said on this topic? So, it's a machlokas aposkin. The Bir Halacha cites a view that's machmir. There were some people of the minag lahakel, some people of the minag lahachmir. I think probably the pashtus is that you could be making, because this view of the Rashba is not cited in the Shulchan Aruch or by the classical poskim on the page of the Shulchan Aruch, like the Magen Avraham or the Taz. Rabbi Akiva Eger brings it down. Even there, it's not clearly that we paskin like. So I think that unless you have a minag to the contrary, minag maker adin, you could be makel on the shaila. And if you want to be machmir, it's a chumrah. But sometimes you don't have a chance to be machmir. Like one week we had a bunch of last-minute company. So we decided that we would quickly throw something. We actually had a chalent made, but it wasn't big enough. Had a whole bunch of other guests. So we like doubled the size of the challah. We threw in another bag of barley. Great. But the barley was raw, and this was last minute company. So we were relying on this lenient position because we didn't really have another choice. It was us, so we would have managed. But I think, strictly speaking, one could be Mako. If you want to be Machmir, so you could be Machmir. Okay. Sifhei. Oh, that was Sifhei. Okay. Sifvav. Okay. So this is the most practical part of this halacha, which is, what does the Jew have to do to make it mutter? What is the minimum Jewish contribution necessary for something not to be considered bishul akum? So the Gemara says as follows. Bein shiniach ovi kochavim lafach Yisrael. Bein shiniach Yisrael v'hafach ovi kochavim mutter. So if a non-Jew puts it on the fire and a Jew stokes the coals, or a Jew puts it on the fire and a non-Jew stokes the coals, it's mutter. The truth is, what does hafach mean? I said hafach, so it's a machlokas. Hafach could mean the basar, or hafach could mean the gechalim. We actually paskin, hafach means the basar. Now, that's true, clearly, if it would have been reached Machal Ben Drusai by the Jew without the non-Jew stoking it. If it wouldn't have cooked without the Jewish contribution would not have caused it to cook, and the non-Jewish contribution is what caused it to get cooked, then the Gemara seems to say it's Aser. Now we'll talk about that in a moment. So that's what this is what the Shulchan Aruch says. Kol shebishlo Yisrael me'at bishulo. Anytime the Jew cooks a little bit of the cooking, bein betchila, bein besof mutter. Whether at the beginning or the end, it's okay. Lefikach im heniach v'kochavim basar o kedera gabe ha'esh. If a non-Jew puts some meat or a pot on the fire, v'hafach Yisrael bebasar, and then the Jew stirs it, v'higis bekedera o sheniach Yisrael v'gamar v'kochavim areze mutter. And then the Rama adds, hagah, v'afilu lo hayam isbasho below siyua haovi kochavim. Even if it would not have been cooked without the contribution of the non-Jew, what does that mean? A Jew puts it on, and if the coals had not been stoked, then it would not have cooked. But the non-Jew stokes the coals, says the Ramat's mutter. Now here's a big problem. The problem is that the Gemara says explicitly otherwise. And that's why the Mechaber would disagree with this. Now, how do you explain the Ramah? So there are a couple of Mehalchim. We'll see in a moment that there are a number of Kulas that the Ramah has that seem to be against the Gemara. One of them is the Ramah writes, if a Jew merely throws in a toothpick that might contribute a minimal amount of heat, right? But certainly is insufficient to do anything substantial, it's mutter. And that too seems to be against the Gemara. The Rama seems to say that if the Jew does anything during the cooking process, that's okay. So what about the Gemara? So there are a couple of possible answers. One possible answer, this is what the Shach seems to hold, is that the Rama is against the Gemara. There's this interesting book called The Minhagim Shebein Bavel L'Bnei Eretz Yisrael, which says, yeah, but in Bavel, the minhag is to rely on just hashlachas kisim, throwing in the toothpick. So it's very strange. The Ramban says, we don't generally follow books that go against the Gemara. So why did the Ramah think we pask in that way? So one possible theory is that the restriction of Bishul Akum was not fully accepted, except under certain circumstances. And when the restriction was accepted, this particular case was, this leniency was the way in which people did it, and that was Koveh the Halacha. Why that is a very interesting question. To appreciate it, we have to actually do the Sugya of Pas Akum, which we're not going to do. But one way or the other, that's what the Ramah's makel. The Taz thinks maybe the Gemara changed its mind at the end, and that's why we're makel. It's not actually at all clear what the basis of this leniency is, but one way or the other, Ashkenazim could follow it. So therefore, Ashkenazim basically say if the Jew did anything in the process, it's okay. So what would that mean practically? We'll talk about what Sfardim need to do in a moment. But what does that mean practically? That means if a non-Jew put it on the fire and a Jew picked it up and put it down, or the Jew put it on the fire, or the Jew raised the flame or lowered the flame, or if the Jew stirred it, or if the Jew did just about anything, even the equivalent of hashlachas kisim, the food is okay. Throwing in the match. Now, again, that particular example doesn't apply to us. A toothpick, either way. Okay, toothpick. Yes, you could just, that would be fine. Making it up, your memar bishulo, you stir it, pick it up. The easiest thing to do is just, if it's a pot, pick it up, put it back down. Turning the fire off, turning it back on. All those would be fine, according to the Ramah. Now, Sfardim are more machmir. In this case, that they follow what the Gemara actually says. And this raises, now there's even a bigger kula, again, that the Rama quotes, that not only is it good enough if a Jew lights the fire, but if a Jew lit a fire and a non-Jew lit a fire from the Jew's fire, Eish me Eish, that's also good. Now, what does that mean? Let's say a non-Jew lit a yahrzeit candle. Sorry, Jew lit a yahrzeit candle. A non-Jew lit the fire from that yahrzeit candle. That fire is good. That's considered Bishul Yisrael. Or, if there's a pilot light. Who here has a pilot light? Right? See, only in the Heights. We also have a pilot light. The funny thing is, the only place in the world that people seem to still have pilot lights are places where people don't seem to have maids. So, everywhere that people have maids, they have fancy stoves. You can't. I think pilot lights are illegal. I'm not sure how they get away with it in the Heights. But anyway, so if you have a pilot light, then, and you're Ashkenazi, it's really quite easy to solve the problem, because you just make sure that a Jew lights the pilot light, and then everything else is Eish Me'esh, because all the fires that are lit from that really come back to a flame that was originally lit by a Jew. Now, this raises for Sfaradim a very difficult conundrum, because in most commercial kashrus, and especially caterers and restaurants and the like, they all rely on these leniencies that only Ashkenazim accept, like the pilot light leniency. So if that's the case, then Sfaradim have to be very concerned, and they can't eat in many establishments. In the a number of years ago, when they instituted the CAF card in the YU cafeteria, so until then, you know, if you wanted to buy in a CAF, you can, if not, not. But then they did this thing that they basically force you. So a bunch of Sfaradim complained. They said, you're forcing us to buy treif, because none of this food is kosher for us. Why? Because it's all Bishul Akum. All the employees, there's a mashkiach, and the mashkiach, you know, maybe he does this or that, he lights the flames in the morning, things like that. But for Sfaradim, that's not good. And all sorts of restaurants. So Rabbi Lamb, who was at the president at the time, asked the question to Aaron Soloveitchik, who was the posek of the yeshiva at the time. He was makel based off of three factors. They're quite mechudish. He said, number one, maybe we could throw in the psak of Rabbeinu Avram that they're hired workers. Number two, if it's made beheter, then in a way that there's a hecker, there's no problem of chasnus. This is a very big kula. And then he said, well, maybe there'd be eva if they didn't eat. There's a kula for eva for pasakum, and he says, well, like if you couldn't eat, that would lead to Eva. It's also a chiddush to apply it in the cafeteria.
Eva,
in other words, if you're being machmir and everybody else is being makel, so everybody else is eating chicken and rice and string beans, and you're eating like a piece of bread and tuna fish, so because you're machmir, so that could lead to Eva, could lead to contention. Ugh, so machmir. Usually the Sfaradim are makel, but when it comes to machalei akum, the Sfaradim are much more machmir. So based off of those leniencies, he thought, cool, even Sfaradim could be makel to eat in a YU calf. Rav Avadia is also makel. Not sure if he thinks this is ideal or not ideal. When he starts off his tshuva, he says, v'niru l'lamed z'chus, and he basically says it's a sfake sfeika. Maybe the Ramah is right. V'imtim t'lomar, the Ramah is wrong. Maybe Rabbeinu Avram is right. So based off of that sfake sfeika, he's makel. First, he says this is a limud chos, which sounds like this is something that you shouldn't really rely upon. But for those that are lenient anyway, most Sfaradim will eat in OU restaurants, even in OU restaurants rely on this kula. There are a couple of hechsherim that are machmir, but for the most part, they're makel. So you could, but that would significantly raise the cost of the food. So restaurants won't want to do that unless there's a large enough Sfaradi contingency that's machmir. So I don't know, maybe in Deal, the restaurants are all machmir on this. But in Manhattan, there aren't enough Sfaradim that would be makbid, that it's economically worthwhile. Anyway, the so as I said, at first the Rav Avadia presents it as a limud zchus, but in his sikum at the end of the tshuva, he writes, Gam Svaradim Yesh Lam Al Mishi Yismochu Litareach V'Lachol Bebatei Malon U'Misadot Haksherim Al Yidei Hashgachat HaRabanut HaMekomit, because of this fake sfeika. Sounds like he thinks that Yesh Lahem Al Milismoch, and it's okay. So Svaradi that wishes to be Machmir certainly can be Machmir, but those that are Mekel, Yesh Lahem Al Milismoch. It does. It does. It does. It's true. It's true. I have I know someone, Svardi, whose parents have a maid who used to do all the cooking. So then he learned about this halacha, so he told them to at least light the fire and things like that, and do things that maybe only Ashkenazim would permit. So, but that b'shas adchak, you could certainly follow Rav Avadia's opinion in that case, that you have that sfeik sfeika.
So I don't know that I'm not the facts at all, but you're a Svardi, and you ask Ashkenazim to apply you. So, I mean, on the basis that we know that Ashkenazim are materialists, but we are not, so a tshuva of Ravan is going to...
Of course. The answer is, if somebody asks me a question and they're Svardi, I'm going to paskin for them based off of what Svardi, what the Mechaber, not the Ramar, the Svardi poskim say. And likewise, an Ashkenazi who asks a Svardi posek, so the Svardi posek will answer the question based off of what Ashkenazim should do. Now, it happens to be that Rav Avadia thinks all Ashkenazim should convert to Svardim, at least in Eretz Yisrael. That's a different story. Why? Because he thinks that they were Rov, and Rov is Koveya. There should be a single minhag. It's not clear. Now they might not be Rov anymore after the latest Russian influx. But anyway, I don't think he changed his plaque. besides, they're correct. I mean, it's a double, you know. Anyway. But yes, generally speaking, Poskim will answer the questions based off of... Just like if a Yeki asks a Shaila to, you know, can I eat this? He won't say, since I wait 6 hours, you have to wait 6 hours. No, if you can wait 3 hours, so you have to wait 3 hours. Okay. Fine. Now, what's the halacha if a non-Jew cooked it and it reached Machal Ben Drusai, and then the Jew tried to rescue it by, like, picking it up off the fire, or turning on and off the fire, or the like, stirring the meat. Is that okay? So here you could make the following argument. It's too late. Let's say a non-Jew cooked it to the point that it's Machal Ben Drusai, and then took it off. Right? Could you eat that food? Certainly not. Right? It's Aser. So how could it be saved by now stirring it or picking it up? That's the view of the Rashba. Once it reaches Machal Ben Drusai, if there is no Jewish contribution, it's Aser, end of story. However, there are Mekilim. The Mekilim say no. Certainly they would agree that if I haven't decided this is finished cooking, it could still be saved. And then there are those that are even more makel. They say, yeah, even if you took it off the stove, but if fundamentally this is not fully cooked, you could save it, put it back on the stove, and it's okay. So the Mechaber seems to be machmir, but at least by Bishul Akum, by Pas Akum, he's makel. How to resolve that steer is an interesting question, but the Rama is makel. Okay, so at least Ashkenazim could be makel. And this is what the Shulchan Aruch writes in Simen Kuf Yud Gimel. He says, "In bishlo avdei kochavim kamachal ben drusai v'garmu Yisrael yesh lasor elim kein hu erev Shabbos o erev Yom Tov o sheyesh hefsid meruba b'davar." The Mechaber says that, generally speaking, you should be machmir, but if it's a shas adchak, like this is your Shabbos food, then you could be mekel. Good. Now, according to the Ashkenazim, we said the Ashkenazim are mekel. Now, what happens if it's fully cooked already, but it's still mitstamek v'yafelo. What's mitstamek v'yafelo? Right. The longer you keep it on, it's better it gets. This is a machlokas rishonim and a machlokas achronim in psak. But it seems to me that most poskim are mekel, and if you look back at the sources that the Ashkenazim rely on, they're mekel. I don't know if l'chatchila you would want to do this, but probably mikra adin, it's mutter. So now we come to my second kula for the chalet. And this is much easier than having the guy turn off the circuit breaker. What do we do? Very simple. Have the guy turn on the chalet. Just say, turn on the chalet, please. Great. By the time Shabbos morning comes, it's 10 a.m., Shabbos morning. Is the chalet mevushal kol tarko? Yes. Is it mitzamek v'yafelo? Yeah, chalet. Oh, even better. If it could cook for 3 days, imagine how good it would be. I don't know, there's probably a limit. But this was put on Erev Shabbos at 6:30. Now it's 8 a.m., 10 a.m. It's definitely mitzamek v'yafelo. So now, I go ahead, and I have a blech, so I could do achzara, right? Pick it up, put it back, let it cook for another hour. Mitzamek v'yafelo, now it's mutter. Much easier than having the guy do the circuit breaker. Okay, so that is, as I said, the second kula in that question. What's the halacha if it's a suffik? This comes up all the time. Somebody goes ahead, and a non-Jew, Sablowski once said, he was asked this question. He told me they were cooking eggs, and non-Jews cooking eggs. Are omelets nachal shulchan malachim? Probably. At the state breakfast, they have those fancy omelet makers, right? Okay, good. So they had a summer kollel in Beth Jacob in California. So they had a non-Jewish employee in the shul who would make them breakfast, make them eggs. And so what was the plan? The plan was, at some point during the cooking process, one of the boys was going to go in, pick up the frying pan, put it back down. Great. Nobody remembers if that was done. Suffolk! What do you say? Pashup shot, Suffolk, Durabanan, Lahakam. Right? Bishal Akam is a Isser Durabanan, Suffolk, Durabanan, Lahakam. Now, if you look at the tour in the Shulchan Aruch, he says an interesting chumrah. Let's start with the tour. Lefikach im yadashaya basar betanur, afilu chomimo liyavesh kli asar, chayshinan. Shema gam kein kivein lebishel, kevin shiadibal. If a non-Jew, you don't know if he was machaving lebishel or not, he's machmir, shema kivein lebishel. So doesn't it sound like he's machmir v'makom safek? So the answer is, as the Taz explains, that it depends if it's davar matzoi, if it's likely, if it's common. So even if the will be makel if it's a safek, but if most likely this is aser, that's the more likely situation. So then you can't say safek derabanan lahakel. Then you would have to be machmir. So nechal chai we did last time. So many more things. We're out of time. Let me just tell you. So bekitzer, we'll finish up. The Shulchan Aruch says that if food is smoked by a non-Jew, it's okay. Many poskim say that applies even to steaming, though that's a machlokas ha-poskim, and it might also depend how the steaming is done. But lemaisa, many poskim are makel for a microwave. That's for a number of reasons. First of all, the isser might have only been stated when there's a source of heat like a fire. Microwaves, there's no source of heat. Everybody knows how microwaves work, right? Magic. So number one, there's no source of heat. Number two is when Chazal made the restriction in the first place, they never ossered that case. They ossered cooking, not microwaving. So, as I said, many poskim are makel, and this is a good eitzah if you do have a non-Jewish employee to have them do it. What about if they cook, do the pots become asar? So we already mentioned before, there's a machlokas harishonim. Generally speaking, we're machmir, but as I said before, there might be leniencies if there's other tzadim lahakel. All right, I guess we're not going to get to our second topic of today. So have a good week. We'll pick up next week, Be'ezus Hashem. Again, everyone who's supposed to bring vegetables and light boxes and the like, don't forget.